Welcome in, everybody, to the Be Freaking Awesome podcast. I'm your host, Josh Belford, joined, as usual, by my permanent guest, not quite co-host, but permanent guest, Angela Belford, and my mom. Also joining us today is Kristen Girard. Kristen, say hello.
Hi there.
There was one time I didn't let somebody say hi. I just kind of kept going because it's awkward whenever all I have you do is say hello, and I have to tell you to do that, but Angela thinks it's great for you to say something. So there you go, listeners. There's her voice. And now we're going to move on.
Oh, that's okay. I wanted to interrupt you and say that, like, I feel like I'm three people, right? Like, I'm his permanent guest and I'm his mom.
And boss at work. but yeah, she has a lot of different hats that she wears, even just in her own son's life. It's pretty funny. But as usual, we're going to start off with a fun little table topics question. And today the question is, what is a useless fact that you know? So Kristen, how about you start for us?
All right. So I wanted to be a paleontologist when I was a kid. So one of my favorite things is whenever I see a griffin, because I happen to know where griffins came from. One of my favorite paleontologists did this really great diagram when he was out west in Mongolia. They come from Protoceratops skeletons. Like, Protoceratops are those dinosaurs with like the really big beak. And they have a frill. And we know that they're herbivores, but when you're just looking at the skeleton, they look like they have these giant claws. And then they have these really long extended scapulas, and it looks like they have wings. That's where we get the legend of griffins that is on medieval knights' armor, because they didn't know what they were looking at. That's my favorite.
That is definitely a fun fact that you probably don't get to use very often. Naming it useless, I don't want to make you feel bad, but that is the question.
I was sitting there going, like, wait, what's a griffin? Okay, wait, I have a story to tell with that, because number one, I don't know what a griffin is. Number two, I just had to put it together based on context, so I now understand. Number three, in Portland, there is an art exhibit called Dinolandia, and we went to it, and it's very cool, and it is this artist that has created this immersive experience that is done kind of in the style of like Rugrats cartoon. And so he's done all of these dinosaurs, and we went through it and we took my husband loves to take pictures, took lots of pictures. My 3.5-year-old grandson went, oh, that's a blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's a blah, blah, blah. Oh, and that's a blah, blah, blah. He literally, based on a cartoon, could identify like the first four dinosaurs. And I'm sitting there going like, I can tell you T-Rex, right? Like, Stegosaurus, I think, because he loves Stegosaurus, because he has a Stegosaurus that he leaves at my house. That's it. Anyway, 3.5. And so your story, I'm just like, I'm literally going to text my daughter and be like, you have to let Henry listen to this episode, because so that's my useless fact. My grandson knows a lot about dinosaurs, and my son knows a lot of useless trivia, and he teaches it to me when we go on road trips. Like, I did not know about apex predators. I didn't know what that was. It turns out I really love it, especially because right after he told me about it, and I had seen Mean Girls on Broadway here locally. It was the traveling Broadway. And so it made so much more sense. Yeah, there's my useless fact. That's terribly useless. A lot of people around me know things that I don't know, that I'm so fascinated by.
A lot of the facts I have are all like context based, though. Like, I can't just like think of a ton right now that I know.
Wait, tell us about koalas. They're high all the time or something.
Yes.
They eat eucalyptus and they're stupid,
yes, or something. The way they process eucalyptus leaves, it makes them high, which means that's why they're kind of like dopey, because they're always high. Also, koalas are where chlamydia came from. So it is a koala-based disease that got transferred to humans.
Okay, what's your useless fact, Josh? Because we are not going down that rabbit trail.
My useless fact that made me want to actually use this question. So at the time of this recording, tomorrow they'll be doing another lottery poll for the third highest lottery like winnings pot ever. It's at $1.02 billion. It's the third highest it's ever been. And it got me thinking, everyone, you know, you start hearing the news, a lot more people start buying, trying to win it. And I did the math on it. If you spent $10,000 a day, every single day for 50 years, you would only spend $189 million if you spent $10,000 a day for 50 years, leaving you with still five times, if you won the lottery, you'd still have five times the amount that you just spent over 50 years left over from that lottery, because you could only spend $189 million of it in those 50 years.
Well, I think number one, that is a serious math nerd. Number two, you have very low expectations if you think you're only spend $10,000 a day.
Well, I do. I did think, like, if you, even if, but here's the thing, even if you take out like initial, let's go initial, I spent $50 million on boats, cars, house, more real estate investments. And then I spent $10,000 sure. a day for every day for 50 years, which right now I try to spend like less than 20-ish a day.
Kristen has a thought about this.
Did you factor in taxes?
No, there was no taxes at all. I factored in. This was purely based on the exact amount numbers because, you know, I don't know how taxes work. Taxes are made up. It feels like I just have to give money to the government and they just tell me however much it is. And I just give it to them. I don't actually know.
Oh boy. I will continue your financial literacy.
TurboTax helps me out every year. Not a sponsor though.
Not a sponsor.
It would be worth going down like the rabbit hole though. You know, if you really want to see if it, how the numbers would work, gotta remember the taxes.
Yeah, to remember the taxes. You are correct.
I do. Oh, now we have a future episode.
And the gassy juice going to the lotto, like going to buy the tickets and all that sure. good stuff. And a follow-up to your useless facts. So when little kids can cite all of those dinosaur names, it's because it is the excitement of naming a monster, and it's fun and it's tame. And also, if you can get them to start realizing what those names mean, it's a really easy way to teach them Latin. Like Tyrannosaurus Rex is King Tyrant Lizard. And Brachiosaurus is a lizard with really long arms.
Okay.
Right?
Huh. Maybe that's why Sammy's teaching Henry everything. A lot of stuff.
She's pretty nerdy about those weird languages.
Yeah, it's really fun.
That may be a good segue into what we're going to talk about today. Kristen likes to use dragons as a metaphor for things. I don't really know. I'm still learning, but we'll talk about it more in a bit. But first, Kristen, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us what you do and why we're getting to talk to you today.
Hi. So I'm a luminary artist. So what that means is I shed the light on who you are, which is really important. Because I happen to have a lot of chronic illness dragons in my life. So the work I do is all about showing you the radiance of who you are and helping you develop your grit, but using artwork so you can really see it. Because a lot of times we end up in situations where we totally lose sight of who we are. So when I'm talking about dragons are chronic illnesses like type 1 diabetes, or things like cancer, or a traumatic injury that leaves you very different than you were before. It can also be mental health issues. And these things, they swoop into our lives. They burn down the village that used to be our life. There's nothing left but fire and tears. And it's frightening. It's horrible. And what do you do? When you're looking at dragons, there's the myths of how horrible they are and how you need a knight in shining armor to go slay the dragon. But what if the dragon's too powerful or wise to allow you to do that? What if the dragon has a lot of wisdom to share? Because dragons are known for accumulating treasures and holding on to it and guarding it, if you will. Those are things that we can dive into and realize, oh, these dragons are also riddle keepers. If you need a really big riddle answered, it's probably the dragon who knows the answer because they're the one who's asking you the question. Chronic illnesses, traumatic injuries, they act a lot like dragons. And some people want to suppress them. They want to shove their dragon in a closet and pretend it does not exist because it's too scary for it to exist. And other people want to cover their dragon up with makeup and glitter. And pretend that it doesn't have scales and the wings are bound tight so it can't fly, so it can blend in. The only problem is it doesn't just smother the dragon, it also smothers you. And then there are other kinds of ways of dealing with it where you befriend the dragon and you allow that dragon to be a teacher, to show you the wisdom that it actually came in to bring. It didn't mean to burn down the village. It was just really hot and thirsty and couldn't find some water.
Kristen, I love this so much because in my new book that's coming out, I use the hero's journey. I introduced that idea, and I know a lot of people that listen to podcasts have understood it. But one of the things that's intriguing is there is actually a documentary called Finding Joe, and it is about Joseph Campbell's work. And one of the most impactful scenes for me is when they talk about the idea that we all think that our journey that we're trying to accomplish and what we're trying to do is slay our dragon. And really the dragon in this metaphor is fear of something, right? And so we think that the journey is about slaying the fear, but we realize that the dragon is just ourselves. It's just a reflection of what we think about ourselves, and that we really have to accept it and receive it. And exactly what you're saying, and I hadn't connected those two when we were chatting earlier, because what you're describing is really the hero's journey for someone with chronic illness. You know, the hero's journey, classic and short for those that don't know, is the, you know, the hero encounters a problem and an obstacle, and then they have to usually have a guide or a mentor that comes along. They cross over into the threshold, they overcome their obstacle, and they return and share their wisdom with the rest of us. And so this is beautiful. And I love that you're kind of really expounding on chronic illness and kind of pitching it as the idea of this hero's journey.
Another component takes things just one step further. A lot of times people feel like they really are their illnesses. Mm. So like when I was a kid, I was the only kid who had type 1 diabetes. No one else around me had it. So I became the diabetic. And at the time, I was 10 years old in the 90s. That was pretty standard language. Mm-hmm. Now, if you say that, you'll hear something completely different. People probably get mad when you call them a diabetic because they are not a diabetic. They are a person living with type 1 diabetes or whatever their dragon happens to be. So part of my work is actually helping people separate who they actually are from outside labels and things put on them. So that you're not your dragon. I'm not going to call it a friend because it can feel hard for that, but a teacher. Because a teacher can be stern. A teacher can be uncompromising. But a teacher can also be a bestower of great learning. So it's kind of like being in a intense boot camp. It's just the boot camp never ends.
That's beautiful. I am a giant nerd for, not nerd, but just fanatic about people-centered language. Having been a homeless advocate, and my TED Talk is actually about, I don't think you should call someone a homeless person. They're a person experiencing homelessness. We don't call ourselves an employed person, a housed person, all of those things. And so I love that you are drawing that connection also with people with chronic illness. I think even if you don't call yourself a diabetic, I've also met people though that's their first identifying factor is, you need to know this about me. Even if it's, I'm not my illness, but you need to know that. And it still does, it's an identifier. How do you walk that line between it does impact my life, it is a big factor in my life, but it isn't my identity? What recommendations do you have for somebody to walk that line?
Yeah, it's like, to me, it's no different that I happen to have brown hair and brown eyes. They're just facts. I can always put on contact lenses. I can always change my hair color. So those things aren't really me. They're just things that I happen to have in this life. To me, diabetes is the same. The traumatic injuries I've had, same thing. They're just facts. And a fact, you know, it's like a sword. A sword can be used to protect or it can be used to harm. And you choose what that fact or that sword says about you. And our language even is interesting. I love language because when we use words like is or was, we're creating context around how we actually feel about that. When we say it is depressing, that's a depression that is currently happening. When we say it was depression, we're implying that that is something that has happened in the past and we are now over that hill on. So in the daily context, like I actually tell people, I have diabetes when it's appropriate in the conversation or when it becomes necessary for someone to actually know, mainly because it has such a big impact on my life and the way I show up in the world. If my blood sugar is very low, when your blood sugar is low, just for everyone who doesn't have type 1 or isn't familiar with it, your brain literally doesn't have enough blood sugar to function. Your brain is dying every time your blood sugar is low. And it is something that you need to treat immediately. But that affects, because your brain is so sensitive, the way it presents is as if you are drunk. Mm. Your speech slurs. You lose control of your body. You start swaying. If you're on a ski slope or you're driving, people will just assume that you're drunk, not that there's a medical issue happening. I tell people, because I don't want them to mistake that I am drunk. I actually want them to know that maybe I might actually need a little help or a little space to take care of what's going on. Or if my blood sugar is high, it's actually necessary for people to know, because I might get a little angry. And actually, same thing happens when your blood sugar is low. Might get a little angry. I might start to cry easier, because your blood sugar can act like a toxin in your brain. And when there's too much of it, that also affects how you show up in the world. And it's also something that needs to be treated right away. A lot of times people will say, I have diabetes or I have cancer. And back to that is versus was, when you say I have, it's implying a present tense. It is a thing I am currently working through and dealing with. So yeah, it is. But it's no different than me having brown hair, except that my brown hair isn't going to make you think that I'm a drunk walking down the street.
So whenever I was a sophomore in college, I was riding down Dixon Street in Fayetteville on a longboard, and I got ran over by a car. Ooh. A car pulled out in front of me. I slid trying to stop, and they ran over my shoulder and all over my chest, down my leg. And so it was pretty traumatic kind of thing, you know, but I had no broken bones. I had no major injuries, no concussion. I had a small scratch on my face that looked a lot bigger because there's a lot more blood on my face for a small scratch. And I was medically fully cleared like 3 days later, I think, is when I went back to the doctor after going that day.
Wow.
And I was cleared. And my point of pointing this out is, like, so many people, like, including like my friends, were like, oh my gosh, like you could use it. You can talk about this for forever. You can use this as a two truths and a lie and all these things. And it was one of those things that, like, since I went through it, and this is also kind of just something about me mentally, like, I'm not going to let that, like, be a label for myself. Now, it wasn't like, it was kind of a, like, in terms of trauma, it was kind of a cooler thing. Like, I got ran over and nothing actually bad happened to me. I got very lucky and nothing bad happened to you. So it's almost like, oh, listen to this cool story, but it was still a label that, like, my friend said that I could, like, oh, like, you could totally, like, egg this on, get yourself out of classes more and all these things. And it wasn't like I was, like, against them, like, oh no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be labeled as the kid who got ran over, but that's kind of just not, like, really who I am. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be the guy who got ran over. So now whenever I, like, mention it to people that, like, oh yeah, I got ran over, they'll be like, wait, what? I was like, oh yeah. Like, it was like, I was fine. You know what I mean? Like, it was no big deal, whatever. And then they want to hear so much more because mentally I've, like, separated it from myself, where I, not that, like I said, it didn't impact me longer than 3 days. Realistically, like, physically it didn't, but, like, it wasn't ever something that, like, I hung my hat on or anything, which I think a lot of people, if they would have gotten hurt more, or a lot of people would kind of hang their hat on. I think that's kind of what you're saying. And even when we're talking with Dr. Mikkel, she was talking about how people, some, like, 10, 11 years after people pass away in their life dealing with grief, it'll be still a label. Like, you'll run into someone in the store, like, oh yeah, my mom died, and it's still just been so hard for me. And she would say, like, that's not necessarily a bad thing that's hard for you, but also using that as, like, the label for yourself of, like, Like that's your identifier. Even if it's a couple months, if it's 10 years later, that's not the identifier you should have. And so I think mine's a little bit funnier to use than someone passing away to use as an identifier. But
it's funny being the mom of a person who got the call of like, Josh has been in an accident. So we, you know, race over there. And I, like the police officer was like, oh my gosh, do you see he has tire tracks from like his shoulder all the way down to his, and I'm like, I am barely holding it together here, dude, you need to like calm yourself down. And then last September, Josh calls and he says, it wasn't my fault. I just got T-boned and literally got hit. Somebody was pulling out. They hit him. His car, my car that he was driving, spun around, and the car coming from the opposite side hit the back end of him and spun him back the other way. Totally walked away. Our insurance guy is like, what in the world? Like, this guy has like 9 lives. And it's interesting that like now Josh's persona, like with our insurance guy, is like, he seems to contrast that with Josh also last year took a bad step on soccer. And next thing you know, he tore his ACL. So it's very interesting how things go, and then how you kind of, other people can start to think about you as well. So in addition to you not labeling yourself, what are some ways that other people can help when they've got somebody in their life that has a chronic illness? Like, how do we be supportive of that? And obviously, each person is different, but what are some tips?
Josh, you have some major angels looking out for you, dude. Like, I'm not even your mom, and my heart is going dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
My palms are sweating, remembering it. That's so funny.
When she showed up and I was in the ambulance, like, I can't remember exactly what I was saying. Cause I mean, like, even if I was okay, like there's a lot of like adrenaline and stuff going on. And so like, and it's hard to remember exact lines, but like she showed up and they walk up to the ambulance and like, I have the EMTs like laughing, like I was making jokes and laughing. And they're like, we don't know what's wrong with him because he shouldn't be laughing. And they almost think that that's a problem because he's so okay.
But and I was like, yeah, but now that is normal. That is exactly. And those of you that listen to the podcast know, oh yeah, we're not surprised by Josh in the ambulance making people laugh at all. But they were like, we wouldn't even try. If it were me, I'd just drive my kid over to the doctor myself. I wouldn't even make him do an ambulance ride. Yeah. But yeah. He does have a lot of angels.
Yes, certainly. You know, it's so I just want to come circle back before I get to your question, Angela.
For sure.
So one of the choices that Josh, you made, and you didn't even realize it, but it's important for everyone who goes through things, is to walk the line of truth and integrity, to not pretend that it's worse than it is. Mm-hmm. And also to not pretend that it is better than it is. I have done this. I remember being 14. It was Valentine's Day. My little sister was supposed to have some sort of party. I had the flu. For somebody living with type 1 diabetes, a flu is life-threatening. Anything that makes you throw up is actually life-threatening because of the way insulin works. And by the way, I'm not a doctor. I'm just a person living with these things, sharing experiences. So I remember I had to go on some sort of drip that was awful. I was so sick, but I knew that my mother actually needed to be home for my sister and my brother. So I told my mother I was fine and I didn't need anybody there with me, even though from the minute she left, I was in agony and I didn't even want the nurses to know how badly I was hurting. I am crying more now than I allowed myself to do that because I didn't feel that I deserved help, that I had to make sure that everybody else was taken care of before me. And most people who are dealing with hard things, they'll either go to the side of humor because it is easier and more socially acceptable than crying. Where other times, like it sounds like what Josh was having with his accident was relief, actually a celebration. Oh my God, I pretty much walked away from this thing. I've got like some cool marks on my body, but those will fade hopefully with time. If not, it's still a cool scar. So that, like, there's that where like when you're walking in truth and integrity, you're both accepting the joy and the relief. But if the situation was reversed and you weren't okay, it would be accepting that, oh my God, I am not okay. And that's one of the big things with chronic illness stuff and traumatic injuries is accepting that life is completely different. And a lot of times what happens is a loss of sense of self, and you get into the state of grief because you're grieving yourself and the life you used to have. And the more you cling to that, the harder it is. So when someone is a family member of somebody who suddenly has a chronic illness diagnosis or has had a major traumatic injury or has had a mental breakdown for one reason or another, the most supportive thing you can do is accept them for who they are now. Now, we talked about dragons and how they swoop into life and how you're not your dragon, but it is this thing that affects you. It's giving that person and their dragon a giant hug and allowing yourself and that other person to mourn what once was. But at the same time, and this can happen minute to minute, starting to question what life can be now. So I might never be able to leave the house without Annie's bunny snacks. They're like one of my favorite treatments for Lowe's. I actually can't walk 25 feet without them, but I've chosen them because they're a tasty snack when I get low. And I could say, it's all right that diabetes, my dragon, is asking me to have these with me. Now, somebody walking with me, what I actually would love is for someone to notice when I'm low, because they might notice before I do, actually, and to say, hey, do you need to pause for a minute? You know, we were going to walk an X distance. How about we stop here and enjoy the view for 5, 10, 15 minutes until you're ready to move on? A lot of times, what people need most when you're going through some of the worst things of life and chronic illness, even though it is by nature chronic and ongoing, that worst part of life is stretched out, and it can have these really big moments of burnout. So what people actually need is understanding and acceptance, and not a continual, well, let's get life back to normal. Something everybody's probably tired of hearing now with COVID. Let's get back to normal, because that's what our brains know, and therefore it feels safe. The biggest thing is accepting that things are different and letting go of what used to be normal.
I love this on so many levels, especially the honesty and integrity, because it's, you know, you're talking about it in the context of traumatic illness, but even things that sometimes happened to us in childhood. I can remember I used to tell these stories that sounded like a Greek tragedy. I'll be like, oh, for 2 years I experienced, you know, XYZ. And then one day I was like, no, that's not really true. No, actually, this abuse started in October because my mom got a job at night, so it wasn't safe with my stepdad. And when we got evicted in April, so that actually only lasted for X number of months. And there was such freedom in being really brutally honest. And also, one time I told somebody the exact details of everything that happened. And I didn't have to do that multiple times, but I one time told somebody minute by minute of exactly what I could remember. And there was freedom in just the truth of, like, it wasn't over exaggerated and it wasn't under exaggerated. Right. And so I talk about forgiveness in this way of, like, you know, when someone does something to me that impacts me. So the way I interacted with my husband was affected because of what my stepfather did. Every time I interacted with my husband in a way that wasn't ideal, the way that I wouldn't have been the life that I would have chosen, I had to choose to forgive that consequence of his action. Like, I forgave the original thing that happened, but then anytime I found my life being different than what would have been, you know, had I not been injured, I had to forgive again. And I would imagine that when you are dealing with chronic illness, that could be helpful. Because for me, I was like, oh my gosh, I've spent so many years in therapy trying to forgive this guy. And why does this still keep coming up? And I'm like, oh, okay, well, the incident is new because I just had to deal with the consequence. So I wonder if that could be helpful in the, like, even acceptance. Like, oh, if something happens and your blood sugar gets low and you fall down and suddenly you're like, okay, I have to accept that this was part of, that this is what my dragon did today. Right. And just being gentle with ourselves through that process.
Yeah. But there's, I'm giving you a giant hug for everything you've been through and everything that just, it's amazing how things ripple out and create new intersections. Mm-hmm. I call them opportunities for healing. Because healing is like a spiral, yes. But it's like a tangled up spiral. So like you think you're done with a thing and then you get to the next loop and then you're like, oh my goodness, I have to unravel this and then go to the next loop. Mm-hmm. It's a process and it's a messy process. Chronic illness is just like that. And it's something I want to make really clear is you do not have to love the event that happened. And if there were other people in there, you don't actually, you never have to say, I forgive you to their face at all, ever. The only person that you truly need to forgive and is yourself. And I know that sounds very odd, especially when you've been a victim. And it is hard to actually accept that, you know, victim is a label, and it's a label that kind of makes me like angry. Because no one wants it applied to them. But to hold yourself in a safe space, like you would an injured kitten or puppy or child, and to say, you know, I love you. This thing happened to you, my precious self, and you are precious. And we forget that. We tend to see the, like all this, my situation, I tend to see all the scars and the effects of all of those shots and infusion sites and the weird places where the weight is on my body because of the way insulin reacts when it goes into your skin. And I could say, oh my God, this is so awful. You're so ugly. Maybe you deserved this. You know, our minds go there. You must have done something wrong for this horrible thing to happen. And especially when there are other things that remind us of that original event, or every time I have to put an infusion set in my body, sometimes it kind of doesn't hurt, but sometimes I'm dancing and yelping around the room in pain because it really, really hurt. Mm-hmm. And we, for some reason, and I don't exactly know why this happens, but a mental health professional might, but in order to protect ourselves, we tend to identify with the worst thing. It's like, if I can be this thing that happened, or if I can be this event, or if I can just say, obviously I deserved it. So all of this other stuff can unfold. It's like if we are allow ourselves to just focus on all that bad stuff, that no more bad stuff can happen. Mm-hmm. The healthier, more healing perspective is to hold yourself like that cat, that puppy, that child, and to remember that you are absolutely no different. You didn't do anything wrong. You are a human here in Earth school. You are learning big life lessons. And some of the biggest life lessons we are asked to learn are about self-love, self-empowerment, and the ongoing cycle of hope that is actually resilience. So when we're dealing with that stuff, with the daily grind, that's where the concept of dragons gets really important. Yeah, your dragons bite. Yeah, they trip you up with their tail. They get really fierce. They give you a sunburn with their fiery breath. But that dragon is trying to tell you something. And a lot of times it's accept that except you, except that this thing happened, but you are still radiant and beautiful, and you are still free to love and be loved. You are still free to create. You are still free to be beautiful no matter what.
The question that I have, which is obviously overall related, but I don't know if it's necessarily directly correlating with what you said, but it's a question I've been thinking. So I have a friend, I won't say names to be fair, but his wife has been through cancer twice, and she even had to have a leg amputated. And that's like, she's recovered now. And I think she's even, I want to say, a year and a half to 2 years clear of the last time she had any kind of cancer. But now that almost puts the label of cancer survivor on her. And obviously that's an amazing thing and something that's to be celebrated and thankful for, but it also, I'm not speaking for her. This is more of like a giving example. And I'm thinking, what if she felt this way? What if she felt the way of like, I may be a cancer survivor, but I still don't want that good label to be my label. You know what I mean? What would you try to do to encourage someone that is kind of facing that? Like I said, like she slayed her dragon, like she is the hero that's returned, but now she has that patch on her arm that's all people can see, you know? I don't know if that makes sense. Maybe that's something that she should just continue to celebrate, but also at times, like I'm sure she doesn't want to just dwell on that hard time of her life for forever. Even if it is something to be celebrated. Does that make sense? I don't know. Maybe that's not something that anyone actually feels. Maybe that's something that she's just always going to be proud of, but I don't know. It's just a thought that I had.
My heart goes out to your friend because it is tough. Oh, it's like having gone through a war, and in a lot of ways it doesn't get the glorious label. You know, I went to battle and I was triumphant and there were trumpets blazing. But we use that language like, you know, you're going to fight cancer. You're going to beat cancer. A lot of times we forget that in the course of that very real war, it might not be a war against another country, you know, but it is a war against your own body. And that creates dissonance in how you see yourself. And even though you survive the war, you fought the battle, and now it feels like everything should be triumphant. Oh my God, I'm alive. I survived. I'm a survivor. The label of survivor, it means you've gone through something that you had to survive. Now, labels aren't necessarily a bad thing. Like the label of artist, I love. What doesn't show is the battles I have fought, or rather, the things I have had to dance with to be an artist. And your friend who just danced with cancer twice and is now dancing away, she's still, and this is true for everyone, but the even just using that term dancing might feel very insensitive, you know, because she doesn't have a leg, because that is one of the prices that was asked of her in that dance. But that doesn't mean that her heart can't still dance. And who knows, maybe she's going to have this like wonderful prosthetic. Prosthetics are great. They are super helpful, but they don't replace that lost limb. So it could feel like, well, what do I do now? I don't want to ignore it because it's clearly a thing that is affecting her and her husband. And I don't want to pretend that these things didn't happen. One of the biggest things you can do is actually ask her, in your healing, where you are at now, what would you love for me to do? A lot of times the answer is, treat me like normal, not like before normal, but treat me like a human. Maybe I do need the door open for me to make it easier to get through, you know, whether she's using crutches or a wheelchair, or maybe I actually need to know that I can open the door myself and that I don't actually need help, because people are in different stages in healing. All of us, like I've come to a place of self-acceptance and have learned to live with my dragon diabetes in a way that I would not have been able to even comprehend 10 years ago when I was burnt out and I couldn't take one more minute, one more second of living with this thing that just didn't end. And that the only escape I could get was to not be in this life anymore. A lot of these things that happen are like that, where there is no escape. And it does feel like there is this dragon breathing over your neck all the time. So ask her, ask anyone in your life, how do you want me to think of you? How many times have you ever been asked that? How many times have you ever been asked, what do you desire now? What would you love to do? Because her goal might be hiking every 46 of the high peaks in the Adirondack Mountain Range, which is a totally doable goal. Why not? There are ways of doing anything you truly desire to do if you desire to do it. And I'm saying this from a place of, I'm an artist who almost lost my eye twice, and I could lose my right eye any day now because of a traumatic injury I had. You could define your life by what you no longer can do, or you could say, what can I do now? Maybe you're going to be a fabulous writer or a storyteller. And perhaps that is actually the label your friend once applied.
I learned this lesson of asking people, and I still don't think that I'm great at it, but I have a friend that is in a wheelchair, and she also did a TED Talk on how to engage with people. That her name's Jamie Smith. You can Google her. Anyway, how to engage with people that are in a wheelchair. And the number one thing she said is, don't assume that you know what we want. Like, ask if they need. And it was cool because we worked together for a while. And I think I had enough reps with her that then I just got to where it didn't feel awkward and weird anymore to be like, hey, you need me to push you? And it'd be like, oh, this hill's ridiculous. Here, let me help you with that. Or let me grab the door. Do you need me to grab, like, all fumbly and making it awkward? And the thing that she told me was like, I appreciate that you're willing to wade into awkward. I appreciate that even though it's clear you're uncomfortable asking me, you still keep asking. Now, my friend Jim, who is legally blind, he will tell you terrible stories of how I'm terrible at this because I've walked him off of curbs and not told him and walked him into benches. And he has several scars because I was like, it doesn't, his disability is not obvious to me. And then we go outside and I'm like, I'm so sorry, Jim. Anyway, and again, but be willing to wade in and be awkward is, I think, what I learned from them. This is like, don't be afraid and don't hold back.
I absolutely love that.
That's some really good insight, Angela. Thanks for sharing that. Moving on a little bit, Kristen, is there anything that you want to share with our listeners as like last words of wisdom or summing up what you've said or a joke or anything? What's the last thing you want to leave our listeners with?
Self-love. It sounds like such a thing. You know, how can you love yourself? And why does it really matter if you love yourself or not? Who does it really affect? It affects everyone, especially you. If we truly want to heal the world and have something as amazing as world peace, self-love is actually what we all need for that to happen. Because when you truly love and accept who you are, no matter what dragons are walking through life with you, there is a deep peace and joy that ripples out and changes your life for the better and everyone else's. One of the things that self-love looks like, it can feel like contentment and it can feel like peace, but really it's a feeling of warmth and knowing that you are wonderful just as you are. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to be you.
That's awesome. I really like that. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for joining us today. Where can people find you on the social medias, on the websites, where can people get in touch with you?
It has been wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
You can find me at radianceandgrit.com on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, I'm at Radiance and Grit. But the best place to find and what I do and to see the artwork I create is at radianceandgrit.com.
We'll make sure to put that in the show notes for all of you guys. I'll ask you this one more thing. What is an ideal client for you?
Ooh, so an ideal client is someone who is ready to love who they are. Someone who is ready to say, you know what? I might not know how to love who I am, but I am ready to take that journey and start. Because what I do is I create portraits that show you the beauty of who you are, that help you be you on good days and bad days, to show up in the world in the way that your heart is calling and asking you to show up in a way that your dreams can and will come true. So my ideal person is someone who is or is ready to truly heal.
I like that. If you feel like that is you, or even if you feel like that's not you, but that's someone you want to be, then you can reach out to her. We'll put all of her links in the show notes for you guys to find as well. We are, by the time this releases, we'll be within 60 days of the release of Angela's second book. What's the name of it again? I should probably know that.
Epic Impact.
Epic Impact. Yeah.
Oh, you know, you're never, it's not like you're going to read it.
Well, that's true. You also changed the name on me, you know, so remember, it used to be Traveling Light.
It's true.
So we're within 60 days of that release. So make sure you guys are prepping for that. Make sure you also give us a review on all the different platforms that you can listen on. Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I believe we're on a Google version of this as well. We're on pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast, and try to give us a review. And maybe we'll also start doing some kind of giveaway for when the book drops.
Yeah.
So look out for that. Make sure you follow Angela on Instagram as well, at Angela Belford. And make sure you guys have a be freaking awesome day.